Main authors share what they're reading. Each summer, a well-known Maine author recommends two books for people all over Maine to read. It's part of a program by the Maine Humanities Council and Maine State Libraries called Read Me. This year, best-selling author Lily King chose Rough House Friday by Jed Coffin and The Vigilance of Stars by Patricia O'Donnell. I'm Cindy Hahn. Join me for a conversation with these authors about their recent works. We'll ask about the life of a writer and what books they're reading, looking forward to read, and what they recommend. And we want to hear your suggestions. Are you gravitating toward escapist novels or stories of surviving a pandemic? Maybe some timely nonfiction? Or are you returning to timeless classics? Get ready to add to your to-read list. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Cindy Hahn, and this is Maine Calling. For some, the pandemic has meant staying at home and maybe finding a little more free time to dive into a good book. For others, there's always a big pile of books by the bedside yearning to be opened and added to. Today, we'll learn about this year's Maine Humanities Council and Maine State Library's annual Read Me program, highlighting Maine authors. And we'll get suggestions for books to add to your reading list. Our guests today are Lily King, award-winning author of five novels. Her latest, Writers and Lovers, was published in March. Patricia O'Donnell is a professor of creative writing at the University of Maine at Farmington. Her work has appeared in The New Yorker and other publications, and she's written a memoir, a short fiction collection, and two novels. The latest is The Vigilance of Stars. Jed Coffin is an assistant professor of creative writing at the University of New Hampshire. His first book was A Chant to Soothe Wild Elephants, and his latest book is Rough House Friday, about the year he won a title in a barroom boxing show in Alaska. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you reading more during the pandemic? If so, what types of books are you turning to? We'd like to hear your recommendations for books you enjoyed. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And welcome to all of you. So thrilled to have you here today.
Thank you, Cindy.
Lily, I wanted to start with you. Lily, there's so much to talk about today, but I do want to start by congratulating you on Writers and Lovers. It's a beautifully written book. It's already gotten so many accolades. You must feel good about having it out there.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, you know, it's been 6 years between books, so it does feel really good, even though it is during a pandemic.
Yeah, probably still good for readers who are looking for something to read. But unlike your last novel, Euphoria, this one's on more familiar turf for you, maybe, and for readers. It's a woman dealing with relationships and grief and being a writer, and it feels really autobiographical. Is it?
That's always a tricky question because you know, you can line up my life and the life of Casey, the 31-year-old narrator, and you can see a lot of similarities. And I definitely drew on all of the emotions that I had in my late 20s and early 30s, you know, trying to write my first novel and feeling lost in this world in so many, many ways. And you know, full of doubt at all the choices that I'd made and you know, doubt that I could ever become a writer and, you know, a terrible sort of dread and fear of failure, all that I drew from, but also, you know, kind of exhilarating moments too, when you just get the scene right and, you know, you feel hopeful. But to write that story, I had to make up, you know, all the scenes and the dialogue and the characters and basically everything that happens. So it's a tricky thing to talk about.
It's a mix of what you know and what you still used your imagination to fill in. It's really great. And I just wanted to find out more about the summer reading program, Read Me, that you were picked. Every year there's a well-known Maine author picked to select two books for people to read. And you're that well-known Maine author this year. How did you go about picking the two books that you did?
Well, I just kind of reached out and read a lot, and it was just really clear to me, you know, when I had already read Jed's book, so that it was already a top contender, and I hadn't read Pat's book, and I just really fell in love with it, and you know, I'd already adored Jed's book, so. I just think these are extraordinary books, and I'm so excited for the opportunity to tell people about them and have people in Maine and all over, you know, discover them for the first time.
Sure. And Jed, how did you feel when Lily King picked your book to recommend?
Well, I've been a huge Lily fan for years, and it felt great. It felt great. I needed it. It had been a long summer, and I was excited to get some news like that.
A good boost. And you've written about some seemingly opposite experiences in your life, being a monk in Thailand, and now with this one, Rough House Friday, being a boxer in Alaska. Were these really very different experiences, or did they actually have something in common?
Well, you know, people ask me about that a lot, and it sort of surprises me sometimes that those two, I don't know what you would call them, vocations or occupations, stand in such opposition in people's minds, because I think what I seek in subject matter are really kind of radical experiences where I found myself going to strange places in order to understand parts of myself that I couldn't access in other ways. And so the ascetic nuances of monastic life are, you know, that's very endemic to the life of a fighter. And so I really associate those two experiences almost as a single or like reflective experience in my past.
And sort of both of them a search for yourself, really.
Mm. Yeah. And I think, you know, definitely a search for myself, but I think like a lot of, you know, kind of journeys inward, you rely on other people and in some cases other expressions of your own culture to tell you things that you can't say to yourself.
Mm-hmm. And can you set the scene a little bit as far as what the book's about, and then maybe read us a little passage and give us a taste of that?
Sure. Well, you know, at this point, it's been over 17 years since this book took place in real time. I had just graduated from college. It was the winter of 2003. I was working on a lobster boat at a Harpswell, not far from where I live now or where I grew up in Brunswick. And I just finished college and felt that there was some itch that I needed to scratch, that, you know, all the books I'd read or the future that was kind of staring me down professionally just would never scratch. And so I set off west and north in a sea kayak and ended up in Southeast Alaska alone. And right as the darkness was falling on the winter, and I found my way into a boxing club on the island of Baranoff Island, the town of Sitka, where a man named Victor Littlefield took me under his wing. He was really in search of a new champion. He was a former middleweight champion of a barroom boxing show in Southeast called Rough House Friday. And I think he saw in me maybe a potential candidate to bring the middleweight title back to his town. So I fought for a year, and I continued to go back to Sitka for several years afterward, but this book takes place during the year that I fought and, eventually won the middleweight title.
But congratulations.
Thank you. But it's also a book that's largely about my family history, which begins really in Portland, Maine, or with the Vietnam War and then Portland. And a story about my parents' separation and how that affected me culturally and emotionally.
Huh. So let's hear a little bit about that.
Sure. I'm just going to read a passage I've never read out loud before, and it takes place after I've won a few fights and have come back to Maine for the holidays after having left town almost a year earlier. As I arrived back in Maine, my mother's home looked less like a place of origin than a vault, rectilinear and cold, unadorned and overly simple. And the vision of my mother, now having occupied the home for nearly as long as she'd ever lived in Thailand, only made her solitude more stark. As it was dark, I fled to a bar with my high school buddies, drinking and smoking and carrying on until 2 or 3 in the morning, when we stumbled down the sidewalks of our past to the neighborhood where we'd all grown up. I was glad to be home, proud to brag to kids I'd gone to high school with that, yes, the rumors were true. I was a barroom boxer in Alaska. In many ways, telling that story justified a missing variable in my life, clarified an unspoken recognition that the story of my family was somehow different, and that out of that story, something different and even dangerous might grow. As for my mother, I didn't see much of her that December. I spent Christmas Day, as I'd spent many Christmases, running on the beach, a 7-mile jog along pitch pine forests, buffered to the south by the open ocean. When she came home that night, we sat on the couch together, and I showed her a video of my fights. My mother was embarrassed by what she saw, but also intrigued. "Hmm," she said over and over, dismissively at first, as if seeing me fight in a ring was no better than having me go back to Thailand to work in a rice field, and then with an undertone of curiosity. I knew that the uncompromising, unsurrendering self that had found the strength to remain in America understood what I was searching for in that ring. But like many other things during that period of my life, we passed over such matters in silence.
Wow. Lily, mm-hmm. Patricia, I'm wondering mm-hmm. if either of you want to comment on that passage.
Well, I loved the book as a whole. This is Patricia. And one of the things that I see there and that I saw throughout the book that I really enjoyed and appreciated was for me to understand a little bit about what a sport like boxing can mean to a man, because it's something very far from my experience. And it's something that I didn't really understand. I just saw it as violence. But in Jed's book, I see it as, I think there's a phrase that he used called the vicious current of love. And I really saw how love is part of that and self-discovery. And it was illuminating for me.
Lily, I think you had written something also about how your initial aversion to boxing, but that this was so much more.
Yes, what I loved the way Jed is really investigating. You know, it's a search for self, but the book is really an investigation and an exploration of masculinity. And you know, he had such distinctive separate relationships with his mother and his father, and both have very separate and different definitions of the meaning of strength. And what I love about this book is that, you know, he's exploring all of these issues about his self and who he is kind of almost in real time, like putting the pieces together as we go and as he writes. And it's not this sort of fixed story that's very pat and kind of already fixed in his head. You're right there with him as in that moment in December with his mother, you know, with all that is said and unsaid. It's so beautifully done, and it's also really compelling.
Yeah, Patricia here again. And he said that he came to understand that the theme was, one theme was his relationship with his father. But as I was reading the book, it just seemed to me that was the overriding theme that he'd always intended to write. And I just love the idea mm-hmm. that he was discovering it as he went along. There's this feeling of real self-discovery and understanding that grows throughout the book. Really.
Well, Jed, thanks for sharing that excerpt with us. I wanted to switch over to Patricia so we can get to her book as well. Patricia, great. Your book, The Vigilance of Stars, has some themes in common with Lily's book, with the journey of a young woman dealing with grief and relationships and finding herself. What prompted you to write this story in particular?
Well, the previous novel that I had published was set in Iowa, largely in Iowa, where I grew up, and I really wanted a book that gave tribute to Maine, where I've lived for 33 years now. So I feel like this is a very Maine book. And a lot of the inspiration came from time spent at our camp on Parker Pond, looking at the water and the feeling that I get there. There's something kind of magic. I don't understand what it is, but there's something that happens just from sitting and looking at a lake and hearing loons. a sense of healing. And so I sent two of my characters in the book to a lake, which I pictured as Parker Pond, because they needed some healing. And two other characters are also part of the story, and their stories intertwine. One of the main character is Kia, a hairstylist in Portland who becomes pregnant. And another character that I was really interested in is a woman in the 1950s who is another character's mother. And in the 1950s, she comes to Rangeley to put herself in the care of Wilhelm Reich, the psychoanalyst who came from Austria and moved to Rangeley, who had ideas that are strange but just fascinating. So another thing that inspired me was my memories of being pregnant and single as a young woman years ago.
Right, so that's all in there. I wonder if you can also give us a sampling of a passage in the book.
Sure. This also is a page, something I've never read before. It's sort of towards the middle of the book, and it's Kia's point of view. She has been, although accidentally pregnant and not involved with the father anymore, she's been very excited about this, and this part of the book comes as a turning point for her. Her feelings about her pregnancy are changing, and it's ushering in a dark moment. She will be late for work again. She hears Drew's voice. Drew is her brother, dead brother. She hears Drew's voice. Way to go, loser. He would tease her in the way brothers tease sisters, but the sound of his voice now is not teasing, it is serious. He almost sounds sad for her for being such a loser. Do you think I care? Kia says aloud to Drew and herself. Do you? She takes her time dressing. She's late already, and they will fire her today when she gets there, so why should she rush? She takes extra care with her eyeliner, drawing dark, elaborate lines around her eyes, thicker than usual. She puts on green and pink patterned tights, short boots, a short, tight dress that shows off her stomach bump. She mousses her hair so that it sticks up all around. She feels she has a date with someone, though she doesn't know who it is. Something is finally going to happen. She's tired of waiting for it. The sun on the street hurts her head. She can't bear to look at the faces of the people around her as she walks. They are so bland, so cheerful, so stupid. Either they are too stupid to know about the darkness and the emptiness underlying everything, or they are liars, deceivers, pretending everything is great. She wonders about hell, about the idea of an afterlife damnation. She watches her feet in short boots, walking as she thinks it over. It's not right. She doesn't believe it. She doesn't think that Drew is burning in hell. These people won't burn in hell, but perhaps they are, at this moment as they walk down the street, burning in some pain, something like she is, and hiding it from themselves, hiding it from everyone. Perhaps it is she, Kia, who is at this very moment burning in hell. Kia steps from the sidewalk onto the street, still watching her feet and thinking of flames in the darkness. And then the onrushing darkness is something real, something visible as it tears into her with a blare of horns and a screeching of black smoking tires. So, a bit of a dark moment for her.
That's a turning point in the book, I know.
Right.
Well, thank you for sharing this. We actually need to go to a quick break right now, but we'll come back and talk more about that. When we come back, we'll go to more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from AltE Store, providing solar power, battery backup equipment, and advice to solar installers and DIYers since 1999. AltE Store. And the Maine Office of Tourism, reminding you that right now is the perfect time to revisit and reconnect with the places Mainers call home by returning to favorite spots and discovering new ones and exploring everything that has made Maine uniquely Maine. For inspiration and itineraries, go to visitmaine.com.
Welcome to Maine Public's This Is My Maine.
What's nice about living in a small town is that you can really make a difference. So the things that you do, people really appreciate and enjoy. And being a creative person, that's not always true. I can make a huge difference in other people's lives by the things that I do. I teach classes. I'm fortunate to live in and around so many creative people. It's really powerful. There's something about connecting with your community that is really important to me. I'm Mally Weber. I'm from Hollowell, and this is My Maine.
This is My Maine is brought to you through the support of Eaton Peabody, the Maine Community Foundation, and the generous support of members like you. Thank you. Go to mainepublic.org to experience more of Maine Public's celebration of Maine's first 200 years. Happy birthday, Maine.
A special Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus is scheduled to take place at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Governor Mills will attend to discuss plans for school this fall. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, each day's address is archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Governor Mills and Dr. Shaw at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today on the program, we're talking with the Maine authors that are part of this year's Read Me program and hearing about some of the books they recommend. Joining me, Patricia O'Donnell, author and professor of creative writing at the University of Maine at Farmington. Her latest novel is The Vigilance of Stars. Lily King is the author of five novels. Writers and Lovers was published in March, and Euphoria won the Kirkus Award and other national accolades. And Jed Coffin is an assistant professor of creative writing at the University of New Hampshire, and his latest book is Rough House Friday. We invite you to be part of the conversation. Email talk at mainepublic.org, tweet at MaineCalling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Actually, right now we have calling in is Martha White. She's a writer, editor, and granddaughter of E.B. White. She wrote the introduction for the new book, Chicken, Gin, and a Maine Friendship, about the correspondences between writers E.B. White and Edmund Ware Smith. Martha, thanks for giving us a call.
You're very welcome.
So would you share a little bit first about your grandfather? What are some of the special memories you have of E.B. White?
Well, that's a big question. I have a lot of memories of him. He lived down the road from us here in Brooklyn, and so we were over on his farm frequently and helping in the gardens and going to the shore and so forth. So I have fond memories of him. He built a boat that was named for me, and I got to launch it when I was in about sixth grade. All my class came down to the launching. That was fun. All sorts of things. We spent a lot of time over there.
And tell us a little bit about, this book is about his letters between him and Edmund Ware Smith. Tell us more about Edmund Ware Smith.
Well, it's an interesting story. The letters were actually given to the Skedomfa Library back in the 80s. My grandfather had copies of all of his letters and Edmund Ware Smith's letters. And the two of them had corresponded. Edmund Ware Smith was working for the Ford Times, which was a little magazine that Ford Motor Company out of Michigan was putting on at the time. And Smith was requesting that my grandfather publish some of his essays in that magazine, which my grandfather did. He famously had a piece called Farewell, My Lovely, which was a reminiscence about his Model T Ford, and that was in the magazine. But Edmund Ware Smith was also kind of a naturalist and outdoorsman, and he was coming to Maine around that time, spending vacations and summers in Maine with his wife, and he eventually retired to Maine and to Damariscotta and lived there, and at that point he made a point to visit and meet my grandfather, and they had a correspondence back and forth about living on the coast of Maine and how to build a chicken coop and all sorts of things like that. Pretty entertaining correspondence. It started, you know, with the work connection, but moved quickly into simply a friendship and kind of a funny back and forth between them that was very entertaining to read later.
I wonder if you could read us a little sample of a letter from your grandfather to Edmund Smith.
Sure. There's one early in the book. It's Thanksgiving 1957, and Smith had just sent my grandfather a chip of wood that a beaver had gnawed off a trunk, you know, when he felled the tree. People were always sending my grandfather things like that. And somehow I think a mention of it made its way into the New Yorker. And so this one is after that event, and he mentions the beaver. So my grandfather says, Dear Mr. Smith, I could have used a beaver very nicely a couple of weeks ago when I decided to recondition my pasture pond. It ended up by my using a backhoe at, I think, $20 an hour. The pond, once a thing of beauty, now looks as though it had been gnawed by mastodons. You may use the Model T piece in the Ford Times if it suits your fancy. I would appreciate it if you would split the check. And it goes on into details about the copyright. He had a co-author for that piece. And then he says, never try to remodel a back kitchen during the deer hunting season. And if you have a flush toilet in your house, never allow it to backfire during November. I'm sorry to hear that your barn is loaded with dry maple firewood. This should be in the woodshed. The cattle should be in the barn. Yours, E.B. White. And then Smith replies and it speaks about the farewell, my lovely, and the check. And then he says, our flush toilets are working just fine to date, but please do not mention pasture ponds or cattle again, because my wife, as a condition of our partnership, reads my mail. She has been hounding me for months for a pond and a cow and had quieted down when your letter arrived. Now the whole thing has been reopened, and I am again reminding her that I am one of the few persons right around here who is able to milk a cow, and that if one is acquired, I shall not go near it with stool or pail. Hoping that you get rested and that your toilet is again working in the proper direction and that your kitchen remodeling group will return to their task following the close of the deer season. I am yours sincerely, Edmund Ware Smith. And it goes back and forth like that, you know, talking about cows and chickens and barns and where the firewood should go and all kind of on a light note. It's fun.
It sounds like a very fun book. That's Chicken, Gin, and a Maine Friendship. And before we let you go, I know you wanted to mention something about how E.B. White's work is being recognized right now in Maine.
Yeah, well, the Brooklyn Library, the Friend Memorial Library here in Brooklyn, has a big banner across the front of the steps because it's Stuart Little's 75th anniversary. So there's been a celebration of that both here and nationally. And I think they've got recordings going on at the Castine Library and various places in the state and elsewhere. And then also the E.B. White on Democracy, which is a collection of books on democracy by E.B. White that I put together a couple of years ago. That one has just been picked up in China and is going to be called E.B. White on Hope for its publication in China. So that's kind of newsworthy and different.
Well, that's wonderful, Martha. Thank you so much for giving us a call today. That's Martha White. She's a writer and editor and granddaughter of E.B. White. She wrote the introduction for the new book, Chicken, Gin, and a Maine Friendship. And getting back to our authors here, before we go to, there's a million suggestions from our listeners coming in for books to read, but I wanted to talk to the three of you again a little bit more about just during this pandemic, being hunkered down and whether that's been good for your writing. Is it good for being introspective, or is it difficult time as a writer? Lily?
At first, yes. I think, you know, when you have this kind of shock to the system of, you know, of your world changing so quickly, it takes a little time to process. I found myself writing in my journal a lot, but not really feeling particularly creative or feeling any of my fictional juices running. But I would say it's coming back now. And I don't know if that's just because I'm slowly at the end of all of my Zooms, you know, because my book tour went went virtual. And but I've gotten a new idea for a novel, and I got it a while ago, and I thought it had died, but just in the past couple of weeks, it's really come back, and I'm just taking crazy notes, and you know, so I'm feeling more hopeful about that.
Oh, that's an exciting period to be in. How about you, Jed? Are you working on something right now? Has this been good to have the pandemic happening just in terms of the writing?
Well, creatively, I think, like Lily and probably Pat, I took about 2 months of just, staring out the window. But one of the cool things that's happened creatively is that now that the chatter, you know, whatever the chatter, wherever it comes from, you know, the literary world or friends or just whatever is out there is quieted down. So I've been able to, I think, tap into what I actually want to do, not what I feel like obligated to do or somehow have a responsibility to mm-hmm. do in terms of a storyteller. So I am just turning now into what I feel like could be a next book. And I always used to like tease people who said this, but I don't really want to talk about it. I feel like it's like, I don't want to ruin it.
Darn. I can't ask you then, huh?
that's all you're going to get.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll let that be. We'll let you be in your own world there. And what about you, Pat? How's it going for you?
Well, it's been a really good time to revise. a lot of revision going on, and so I'm finishing, maybe today, have finished a draft of a novel that I've been working on for a few years. It's also a wonderful time to read, so this mm-hmm. Show is really coming at a good time for that. So many good books to pick up on. I have to tear myself away from reading the news as it seems like things fall apart so rapidly, but it's wonderful to turn to a book where you can just lose yourself in that world and get away from this one for a while.
Right, mm-hmm. and a lot of recommendations coming in, which we'll get to in a second. Let's go first to a call from Alex in Freeport. Hi, Alex, what did you want to ask?
Hi. Hey, Jed, this is a question for Jed. I grew up, my brother was Theo, and I grew up close to you, Jed, and I lived on the Greenwood Road, and I don't know, can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, Leverett.
Oh, great.
Right?
Hey, yeah, how are you?
Yeah, great to hear from you.
Great to hear you on the radio, and I remember hearing about your book in Alaska and reading about it, that you were kayaking up there and were a boxer. And I had always had that kind of impression of you, that you're this guy that I kind of look up to. And but anyways, I wanted to ask you about your trip to, you said, Thailand. You were a monk?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. That was my first book.
And I just wanted to ask you what you might have learned from that experience as a maybe more of a spiritual experience that maybe has helped you with your relationships, and especially also like in this time that we live in right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you, Alex, for calling in. That's a really, I know that people tend to ask questions that have like safe answers. And I think this is one of those questions that is, you can't run from the truth a little bit. So I'll just say that, you know, spending the time in my mother's temple, in her village, you know, the big takeaway, and I think the takeaway from both my books is always sort of the same, which is that you go out looking for very definitive answers, and you realize that typically when you head out into the world, you don't even really know what the question is that you're asking, never mind what the answer might be to that question. And so I know that fighting, that spending time doing spiritual practice, I think I set out hoping to like come home with a deliverable, you know, and all I really did is just reacquaint myself with the deep uncertainty that I think we really face as people in this universe. You know, that sounds pretty wild, but I really do think we really strive for certainty, for definitive answers in our lives. And especially now, I think we're realizing that those, you don't get those in life, you know? And that's, I'm just really glad that writing is a way that I can help myself understand that.
Great. Thanks for calling in, Alex. We have another call from Kathleen in Farmington. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I want to recommend Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates. Mm-hmm. I know it's not a novel. I've been reading a lot of novels and a lot of mysteries. But after George Floyd died, I thought, what can I do? And I had read Ta-Nehisi Coates' a year ago or so, and I thought, this is a real good beginning for us white privileged who don't know anything.
Well, so, Kathleen, I think that it's certainly not just novels we're talking about today, because I think a lot of people like you are seeking out more education, enlightenment about the racial justice movement as well. So thanks for sharing that. And if others have suggestions along those lines, we welcome them today. We already do have to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Rooster Brother, roasting coffee since 1987 in downtown Ellsworth. Learn more at roosterbrother.com. Roosevelt Campobello International Park, a legacy of friendship between two great nations. Looking forward to welcoming visitors soon. More at fdr.net. And Breakwater, offering summer day camp programs for ages 3 to 18 through August 21st. Enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On July 17, 1970, United States Interior Secretary Walter J. Hickel granted Maine's request to classify the Allagash as wild, the most restrictive category. The Allagash Wilderness Waterway encompasses 92.5 river miles and represents 3/10 of Maine's total river mileage. Protection of the waterway was further enhanced in 1970 when it was named the first state-administered component of the National Wild and Scenic River System. For more than a century, the Allagash has been praised and enjoyed as a sportsman's paradise.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Roosevelt Campobello International Park and the Island Institute. Happy birthday, Maine! A special Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus is scheduled to take place at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Governor Mills will attend to discuss plans for school this fall. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. And in addition, each day's address is archived at mainepublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Governor Mills and Dr. Shaw at 2 o'clock this afternoon and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, mainepublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. My guests are three exceptional authors, Lily King, whose newest book is Writers and Lovers, Patricia O'Donnell, whose most recent novel is The Vigilance of Stars, and Jed Coffin, whose latest book is Rough House Friday. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment to our Maine Calling Facebook page. Patricia, since the callers are all calling in with recommendations right now, I wanted to hear one of yours, either books that you have read or you're excited to read. Anything you wanted to share?
Oh, sure. I would like to mention a book by a former Maine resident, Kate Elizabeth Russell, who wrote My Dark Vanessa, which was published this year. Kate was a student at the University of Maine Farmington in the early 200s or 2000s, and this book is really stunning and disturbing and wonderful about a 15-year-old student at a boarding school who is seduced by her English teacher. And the disturbing thing about it is that she feels that she's not a victim, that she's a person with agency, making her own choice, and that's what is psychologically interesting and disturbing about the book.
That one's gotten a lot of attention.
Yes, it has, right.
How about you, Lily? Did you want to share a suggestion?
Oh.
You have a lot.
I know, it's really hard to narrow it down, but I would say An American Marriage by Tayari Jones, I think, is just an excellent book. I love The Revisioners by Margaret Sexton. I love The Other Language. I just discovered that about a month ago by Francesca Marciano. I read The Splendid and the Vile by Eric Larson recently about Winston Churchill, and I really needed that because I needed to read about, you know, a great leader in a time of great peril. I don't feel like we have one. And also, of course, Beloved by Toni Morrison, and I'm about to start Song of Solomon, actually, by Toni Morrison, which I've never read.
Oh, gosh. Do you just read all day and all night?
I wish.
Oh, that's wonderful. Great suggestions. And Jed, let's hear from you. What would you offer up as either something you have read or want to read soon?
Sure. I've got three in mind. The first is Men We Reaped by Jesmyn Ward. It's a memoir. The subject matter is profoundly important, but structurally, I know we're on summer vacation, so I don't mean to dip into English class here, but structurally, it's really a masterclass in how to tell a story. It does things that are so complex and so elegant in terms of time and how she moves through a story. And then After the Eclipse by Sarah Perry, which I think was a Reed Main.
Last year we had that on
summer.
Right? That was part of that was the Read Me book from last year.
Yeah. And I've waited so long to read a book that, independent of the tragedy at the center of the story, that reflects back to me what I feel is like a portrait of my generation of Maine kids. I saw it for the first time and it was so powerful. It just meant a lot. And then finally, This America by Jill Lepore is a very short book. It's helped me understand how to define an American narrative and how we came to be in a more universal sense, that one that's not divisive or caught up in rhetoric. It just was a very generously whole book for an understanding of the United States.
Great. Well, for all of you who are trying to scribble these down madly, we will have a list posted later on the Maine Public on our Maine Calling website and on our Facebook page. And I'll rattle off a couple more here. We have an email, from a Facebook post from Liz. Currently reading The Detective in the Dooryard by Bangor Police Department's Tim Cotton, and just finished Paul Doran's latest Mike Bowditch mystery, One Last Lie. And he's also been part of this Read Me program in the past, Paul Doran. So thank you for those suggestions, Liz. And we have an email from Jean saying, I am currently reading Ashley Bryant's Infinite Hope. It is an illuminating story of his life and learning as a young man with an artistic dream and the realities of being a soldier in World War II. His letters home and drawings of fellow soldiers and his memories of his service time and beyond create a remarkable view of his life and times. A wonderful read. Thank you for that suggestion, Jean. And I will go now to Brian calling from Portland. Hi, Brian. What did you want to talk about?
I like to talk about a lot.
Okay. Did you have a book suggestion?
Yeah. I like to write. I've jumped great American novel many times, but I always wake up without ever having written it. Sadly. I would refer us all to Alexander Pope, known as the Wicked Wasp of Twickenham, I think 18th or 17th century. Uh-huh. He was somewhat of a curmudgeon, a poet, and he said something that I can never forget. It's such a wonderful line. What oft was felt, but ne'er so well expressed.
Great. Well, thanks for calling, Brian, and interesting suggestion there to check out. And we also have Bill calling in from Durham. Hi, Bill. What did you want to talk about?
Yeah, I am just finishing my eighth Richard Rousseau novel. I started about 3 years ago, and I can't recommend highly enough anybody is going out there and getting hold of any Richard Rousseau novel they can grab. Unfailingly deliver this great, quirky, humorous insight into the foibles of human nature and unforgettable characters. I would love to walk around Back Cove with Richard Rousseau for an hour.
We are lucky.
About how he does it. It's just remarkable.
That's great. We're lucky to have him here in Maine. Any of our panelists want to weigh in on a favorite Richard Rousseau novel?
Straight Man.
Okay.
The Whore's Daughter.
So funny. He is really, truly a Maine treasure.
Right. He is. Well, thank you, Bill, for that suggestion. And we'll go now to a Facebook post from Jennifer. She says, I just finished Bark Skins by Annie Prue. It's a heavy book, literally and metaphorically, but well worth the read. Anybody read that one, Barkskins or other Annie Prue?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard good things, too. And Rick is calling from Brunswick. Hi, Rick. Did you have a question?
I do. Thank you very much for having me. I love your show, and Jed loved your book. I have a question for Jed. I know that you spent some time in the Portland boxing scene, if I read correctly, and wondering if you could comment on how important it is to have these types of opportunities for youth, and what's the current state of boxing in Maine?
I know that there was a period in my life, in my 20s, when I was living in Portland and had little else going on besides my writing, when I found my way into PBC and Bobby Russo. And I don't know, I guess I've never had something so close as like an informal family as I did with the Portland Boxing Club guys, and you know, Lisa Caronia and I are still really in touch. I hope she's listening. And those are just relationships that last a long time. And I think maybe now, when we feel less connected from one another, those kind of informal family networks are really important. And I just really think it's important that we continue to cultivate them as a community.
Great. Thanks for asking about that, Rick. And another quick recommendation here, an email from Jackie. I recommend Writing on Stone by Christina Marsden Gillis, a memoir of the authors and her family's summers on Gott's Island. She and her husband purchased Ruth Moore's home and returned there every summer. Writing this book was prompted by the family's return to the island to bury the ashes of Gillis's 26-year-old son, who had been killed piloting a plane in Africa. The memoir pays homage to the island, its residents, and the way of life on this tiny island. It is lovely. Anybody have comments on that one? I know we're just going quickly through these. Well, actually, I did want to ask the three of you, all of your books touch upon a certain theme of just going for it, staying true to your goals and your dreams. Do you have any advice for fledgling writers out there?
Read Writers and Lovers by Lily King.
There you go.
That book's really inspiring.
Go for it. Do it, yeah. You know, hang on to your dreams. Don't let them go.
Anything in terms of the actual craft and discipline involved with becoming a writer?
Just sit down and do it.
Exactly.
Do it every day.
Do you each do that every day? You have discipline?
Most days, many days.
Yeah. Discipline, it really is 99% discipline. You know, if you don't have that temperament, it's really hard to write a book.
Right.
You just have to do it, even when you don't feel like it.
And I'm just curious, how conscious of the reader are you when you write? You all have this ability to write so authentically where the reader doesn't really notice what you're trying to do. Are you trying to remove yourself from the idea that there's someone out there reading it?
That's a really good question. I do try not to think of someone because that tends to be chilling to my writing if I think of what someone else might think of this. It takes away the enjoyment. I don't know. I'm curious to hear what Jed and Lily have to say about that.
I think that there's a weird magic spell that kind of like takes over my brain for a period of years. And then suddenly the spell's broken and I realize that like what I'm doing is not just my own thing, you know, that it's actually made for someone else. And then I feel like I suffer the consequences of pretty quickly, you know, I'm just recognizing like, this is not your own show. Like it's, this is about a lot of people with a lot of feelings and there's a lot at stake in telling a story because it can never just be yours.
Well, what a treat to talk to the three of you today. Thank you so much. Lily, Patricia, Jed, thank you for joining us today. Lily King is the award-winning author of 5 novels. Writers and Lovers is her latest. Jed Coffin is an assistant professor of creative writing at the University of New Hampshire. His book, Rough House Friday, was selected for this year's Read Me program. And Patricia O'Donnell is professor of creative writing at the University of Maine at Farmington. Her latest book, The Vigilance of Stars, was also chosen for the Read Me program. And you can visit the Maine Humanities Council webpage for more information about their Read Me summer reading program. Lucy Suchek ran the board today, and today's program will be rebroadcast at 7. You can find past editions of Maine Calling at mainecalling.org. Our theme music was composed by Mike Jandreau, and Maine Calling Show today was produced by Jonathan Smith with help from the Maine Humanities Council's Nicole Rankert. Stay with us for today's briefing with Maine's CDC Director Nirav Shah, as well as Governor Mills and Education Commissioner Pender Makin. That's coming right up on radio, television, and Maine Public's website and Facebook page. I'm Cindy Hahn. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio. Have a great weekend.